Good morning and welcome to your wake-up call. This is Tana Hartman. I'm your host today, and you are here with the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, our Friday morning radio program. Our engineer today is Dick Paddock, and our guest is Dr. Catherine Shea. Dr. Shea is a board-certified pediatrician. She also is trained in preventive medicine and environmental health. She has adjunct appointments at both UNC in the Department of Maternal and Child Health in the School of Public Health and at Duke. And she is on medical staff at NC State Student Health Service. Welcome, Dr. Shea.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I'm going to call you Kathy. Okay. All right. Kathy, you also have quite a history of involvement. You were a medical consultant for Physicians for Social Responsibility, a member of the Climate Change Task Force for North Carolina, and you have done a lot of volunteer work, local school health advisory committee. You're a past president of Toxic Free North Carolina. 6 years on the Committee for Environmental Health for the American Academy of Pediatrics, and you were the lead author on the 2007 AAP Technical Report and Policy Statement on Global Climate Change and Children's Health. You've for a long time been really actively involved in children's environmental health policy and development. And last but not least, you are a member of the original steering committee for Transition Carrboro Chapel Hill, and that's what we're here to talk about today. So tell us a little bit about Transition Carrboro Chapel Hill, how you got involved with it to start.
Well, I actually helped form Transition Carrboro Chapel Hill, but the way I got involved in the whole movement, which is an international grassroots movement that's about 5 years old now, was that the kind of founder of the idea of transition towns or the transition movement wrote a book called The Transition Handbook, and one of my friends from church pointed it out to me, and I went online and saw this little 6-minute video by Rob Hopkins and got hooked and immediately ordered the book and read it cover to cover, including all of the captions and all of the boxes and all, you know, everything. And it was a really compelling read. He brilliantly combined the twin drivers of climate change and the end of cheap oil, or what's sometimes known as peak oil, as important and irrefutable forces for change in our world globally, and put together a sort of a 12-step process for a positive, proactive, community-level response that takes us from being frightened about these changes, which are inevitable, to being hopeful about a future in a lower carbon, less petroleum-intensive world at the community level. And so I had been working on climate change for several years, finding it very daunting because it's a really scary problem, and I consider it sort of the biggest public health threat that's facing us as a species, and children are among the most vulnerable, and they're going to suffer first and worst. So I was searching for a way to do more than just awareness raising and capacity building, which is very important, but it was feeling like it was too slow. And I wanted to do something that was on the ground, hands-on. Let's do some work and not wait for the big government changes that are obviously happening way too slowly. So as I read this book, I became enthralled and excited and hopeful for the first time in a long time. After I finished the book, I went online and just Googled Transition Carrboro and Chapel Hill, and I found that there was a meetup group. So I went to the meetup group and I met a group of people, including Margaret Crones Lukens, who is sort of the spark plug of the Transition Carrboro Chapel Hill movement. And she and the first step in the 12 steps that are described in the Transition Handbook was about 18 months ago now. Mm-hmm. And brainstorming.
Did a remarkable job. I was at the Great Unleashing in May.
Well, you know, we were going on faith. It's been really kind of a mess. As you read the book, it sort of takes you out of kind of business as usual academic environment where, you know, it's very hierarchical, there's a body of knowledge to it, it's heavily science laden, which has an orientation more egalitarian, it's much more organic, and going with it, it's a lot like improv. It's you just sort of take with the advice in, and a lot of the techniques that are in the hand-based technologies, they were, you know, whoever shows up as the right could, you know, be statistically analyzed and be kind of really sort of the hope and dream and magic of this process. And when people leave, and we had periods of time when there were only two or three of us at the meetings, and that we needed to pull off the unleashing sort of appeared. Any budget to do it or any place to do it, we set a time. It really exceeded our wildest dreams. It was wonderful.
I was there and was very moved and positioned communities for a few months before that. And they said, do you know there's one in here in Chapel Hill?
We're actually the first official transition.
In the nation. Yes. And now there's some 300,
I think. Yeah, so internationally.
Is transition. Why transition? And you mentioned PICO. But what are the things that galvanized you? And the website for the Institute for Integrated Economic Health website, and the first thing I, you know, exactly what they believed and what their methodologies were, and they massive change of people's behavior. Okay, and they are very supportive of that. You envision will come. What are the threats to children?
Right. At this from a environmental public health point of view, and is climate change, because it really profoundly affects our species. So it's going to affect water. It's going to affect air quality, our ability to retrieve resources. It's going to affect how much land we have. It's happening. There's no doubt that it's happening, and I think we have some control over it. So I've spent a number of years of working with policy people and doing capacity building, and increasingly quickly, it's changing the planet faster than, and the global response is too slow. So that it pitches change at the level of community. Individuals can do to live a more sustainable lifestyle, really not enough. And then there are people like Al Gore and Bill McGibbon who are me sway. And so this was a level of the ordinary human being. And it provides the opportunity of climate change, mm-hmm. which is going to change things, and some accompanying, in a very creative and proactive way, envision what when we don't have access to cheap oil, and we don't have, because of climate change, or because we have and find the hopeful positive, which according to many of us and very strongly in now, which are pretty isolated, pretty on inputs from the outside world. So being more locally resilient, creative ways where we can use our resources to serve our needs in a way sustainable for future generations is a really exciting place to be. He brilliantly puts together several things. It puts together the we will run out of oil at some point. We don't know when. Not only causing great harm to the planet, but also dependent upon them. So we have to figure out a way to live without them, because they're increasingly into the transition growth financial society, which is also unsustainable. And so if finance is really assumptions, then the so those kind of big drivers out a lot from addiction
how so?
So which is an echo of the 12-step. One of the really important things about the transition movement is that it addresses this go through, which includes on fossil fuels, that it's unhealthy, unsustainable, actually doing. And we need to transform our expectations, our hopes and dreams into a more positive, it helps people kind of come together and give the challenges when you start talking about these big drivers of it, have a tendency to just implode and sort of turn inward and say, it's too big, it's horrible, I can't deal with it, so I'm just going to pretend it's not there. Mm-hmm. And that's a recipe for disaster. So the transition movement helps people kind of pull out of that.
Yeah,
it's exactly. It's an antidote, and it's a positive antidote. It's an antidote of hope. It's an antidote that that taps into our cumulative creativity and our cumulative imagination. And you know, humans are an incredible species. Those things that we imagine, we can make come true. If you just look at what happened in the 20th century, we went from horse and buggy to the Model T. To space flight in mm-hmm. one century. We went from the Pony Express and the Telegram to satellite cell phones, you know, we have power in our collective ingenuity and imagination. And what we need to do is harness that imagination as a community, realistically looking at what the parameters of life will be like in 20 years, and then imagine a world that we want to live in that's better than the world that we live in now, which will preserve the resources of the planet for future generations, for all species, for all time, and not just be sort of human-centric, and not just be sort of now-centric. And so it's a very exciting, positive, proactive approach to these really hard problems. And I can tell you that the process of working with the steering committee and then doing the unleashing was energizing, it was hopeful, it was fun, it was funny, it was exciting, it was a lot of work, and it was, it's what I chose to do last year instead of going out and giving talks and, you know, traveling the world and talking about climate change and children's health, because it felt like it was going to make a difference. And so I'm very excited about where we are right now and hopeful about where we're going.
It is very exciting. I'm one of those people, too, who has been, I've been very interested in a number of things. I'm a member of the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, as is Dick. We do have male members, by the way. it's the oldest women's peace organization on the planet. And but we've been looking at a number of things, and among them is the, you know, climate change and water issues and social justice, economic justice, and trying to find a way to pull them so that they're not these little isolated, sort of atomized, tiny movements on a special issue, on one issue, to bring it together in something within the community. And as you say, this is community-based. How are you defining community?
Well, that's always a tricky question, isn't it? I think the kind of easiest definition is actually geographic. And one of the reasons that's important is that we're trying to work on becoming more locally resilient. So we have to sort of define your geographic area. But there are many kinds of communities. Mm-hmm. And so within, one of the nice things about the transition model is that it is all-inclusive, and it encourages all definitions of a community, and actually will work best if all of the, you know, the micro communities and sort of affiliations that are within a community sort of come together with a common vision. And so I think, you know, we chose Chapel Hill Carrboro, or Carrboro Chapel Hill, because we live here. The people from the steering committee were a mix of people from both towns. And while the towns are different and have different personalities, they're contiguous and totally intertwined. And so we decided that it made most sense to try to kind of include both towns in the transition movement. Both towns are pretty far advanced along the sustainability curve. Both towns have carbon reduction commitments. Both towns have peak oil resolutions. There's a very strong local food movement. There's strong transportation movement. You know, there are all sorts of things that are already started. And one of the things that we think the Transition Carrboro Chapel Hill can provide is a common ground where all of the people who are working on different aspects of sustainability can come together under the same umbrella. Join in common visioning exercises, find ways that we can cooperate with each other, find gaps where work needs to happen, avoid redundancy, avoid turf wars, and that's part of the work of the next year or two. One of the major goals of the transition movement is to actually come up with a community-generated energy descent action plan, which has to be participated in by all stakeholders. And so you have to have all the players in the room, and all the players are all of us in the community. So the more the merrier. Everybody is encouraged and welcome.
We will be back with that in a minute, because I have a question to ask about that. But we're going to take a break and hear about our sponsor.
Yes, our program is underwritten every week by the Internationalist Bookstore, 405 West Franklin Street, which is your local resource for such things as, I'm sure you'll be able to find transition-oriented books, and many other things that you won't find at any other bookstore. And if you don't find it there, they'll be happy to order it for you. It is also a resource for community activities, which take place at various times in the bookstore. And this is brought to you by the Triangle Area Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. You can find internationalist books on the web at internationalistbooks.org. And you can find the WILF website at triangle.org. And if you're having any problems with receiving WCOM and the WILF show in particular, know that you can stream us from the WCOM website, which is wcomfm.org. And there's a button on the right-hand side which you click, and it will come through your computer streaming whatever program is live at the moment. There's also an archive of WILF shows on the WILF website, trianglewilf.org. On the left-hand side, there's a button called Radio, which you just click, and you'll be able to access our previous over 2 years' worth of WILF shows.
Thanks, Dick. And we're back with Dr. Kathy Shea talking about Transition Carrboro Chapel Hill. Kathy, we were just saying just before about, you know, how getting all of these different groups involved in this or bringing them under an umbrella. How are you going to go about doing that? How?
Well, we're, you know, that's a work in progress. And one of the, well, let me start with the sort of unleashing. One of the things that we tried to do with the Great Unleashing, which was this big open space event that you went to, was make sure that we contacted key people in the various areas of concern, so, and invite them to come and join in the process. And so we reached out to people who were involved in the local food movement. We reached out to organizations like the Sierra Club. We tried to reach out to people who are doing green business. We tried to reach out to people who are working on transportation. And that's, I think, an ongoing process. So we need to do outreach. We are working very hard on developing, improving, and enriching our website. There's a lot of word of mouth. I think that one of the exciting things about the transition process and our unleashing in particular is that people just heard about it. I mean, I think people get excited about this concept, this movement, and start talking about it. And just like you were sort of reading about it, you talked about it, found out that it was happening here. And so word of mouth is a lot of what we need to do. And then we do have some working groups, and one of the working groups is called the Outreach and Networking Working Group. And so once they, the first priority is to sort of work on our website, which is www.transitionCCH.org. And if you go there, you'll find out about us, and there'll be links to the larger transition community, the global community. Then sort of next process after we get that enriched and sort of set up in a way that is dynamic and compelling is to really work hard on getting the word out that we exist and inviting people to join the working groups. And inviting people to form new working groups, which is, you know, sort of an ongoing, very organic process, really different from what we're used to with the sort of hierarchical structures and stuff.
It's interesting, Rob Hopkins used the word someplace viral for it, and I thought, viral. I tend to think of viral negatively, but this is a positive slant on viral.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that he says is this is disseminating virally, and so there are transition movements in every continent that's populated. And there are over 300 internationally. The biggest concentration is in the UK and Europe because that's where it started. But they're everywhere, and the US has a big presence now. But the other thing that he says is that once you understand what the transition movement is, you should be so excited about it that you should feel deprived if you don't spend the rest of your life working on it. because it should be so fun. There should be an element of celebration and joy and imagination and creativity, which is really not present in a lot of the things that we do, which are sort of business as usual drudgery in whatever our chosen yeah. profession is.
Because basically, you're re-envisioning, I say we, the transition community is re-envisioning the future. I mean, completely, basically almost from the ground up. And so you get to use your imagination and your creativity to not only to envision, but to make it happen.
Exactly. You got it.
Okay.
And that's actually one of the things that really appealed to me, because I think, you know, one of the problems or sort of classic mistakes that the traditional environmental movement made was it was very negative. You can't do this, you can't do this, you can't mm-hmm. do this, you can't do this. And it was pretty heavy on the doom and gloom. And I think most people who have been involved in the environmental movement since the 70s recognize that was just mm-hmm. sort of the tone that evolved. This is really a sea change. It's an attempt to say, yes, these horrible things are happening and we're responsible, but we have the power to change and we can choose our future. We don't have to let it just happen to us. And you know, this the community level response, which I keep coming back to, is a level that we all feel like we can, you know, we can all kind of go to a town meeting or watch it on a public access TV. We can all get a letter to the editor in the local newspaper. We can talk to our neighbors. We can talk to local businesses. We can choose to spend our money locally. There are lots, we can choose to concentrate really on local food. There are lots of things that enable us to enrich our community and be more connected and more locally resilient. And if we start going down that direction, we can, each of these little transition movements can be an incubator of change. It can be a little mini experiment, and we can try things on for size, and if they don't work, we leave them and try something else. And as we have success and celebrate our success, we publicize it and other people get new ideas, and you know, it's sort of an iterative, positive change.
It is. I mean, it is very exciting, and I know that there are a number of projects underway in working groups, but what would you say to someone who might want to know more and, you know, about, might have their own ideas that are not part of?
I would say go to the website, www.transitioncch.org. Look at what we're doing, and then get in touch with us. And you can do that from the website. You can do that by joining a working group. When our new and improved website is up in a few weeks or maybe a month or so, I'm not quite sure what the time frame is on that, there will be active forums that people can come and participate in. Mm-hmm. And so there are lots and lots of ways to get involved. And we will be working over the next few months on some additional community level events, which will hopefully draw more people in. But the website or contacting one of the steering committee or the spokes council is a great way to get started.
Okay, and is the spokes council's their names and contact information on the website?
The contact information is on the website, so you can email and just sort of say what your interest is, and then that will be triaged to the appropriate person, and we'll get back to you.
Okay, and I know we're looking at trying to decide whether there's going to be some sort of project or gathering or something on 10-10-10.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we are going to have to break here. I want to thank you very much, and I hope you'll come back before too long and talk again in maybe in more detail about each of the working groups,
or I'd be delighted to.
It's wonderful.
Thanks for having me.
I'm glad you could make it. You have been listening to your wake-up call for the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, and I'm your host, Tana Hartman. Please join us again next Friday, and have a great week, and do something for peace.